Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Buster Olney about the state of my garden and also about all the action leading up to the trade deadline. We'll talk to Bob Ryan about the heater that the Red Sox have been on for the last month. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Jake Bird was a guy who last year was highly sought after at the deadline. The Yankees got him as part of their big bullpen deadline day, and he was dreadful with the Yankees. And I don't wish bad on anybody, but the idea of him coming to Washington and just picking up the joint and providing you with endless content is just too entertaining to not think about.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Jake Bird stinks. Just let's establish that. He stinks. He's in the major leagues, unlike seven of the nine pitchers the Nats have acquired. Jake Bird has shown in the major leagues that he stinks. We get this from Peter O'Brien in Dortmund in Germany. Greetings from sunny Germany. Today is trade deadline day, and I awoke to the news that my Yankees have sent four relievers for a breakout lefty bat that can't field, as happens when teams get desperate this time of year. Yeah, but he hit a home run. Garcia hit a home run in his first game there.
Yes.
And Peter O'Brien writes, welcome to Jake Bird, and I just want to apologize in advance. The sixth and seventh innings just got a lot more painful.
Nothing can be more painful than the text messages that I'm reading through from you over
from
the last
night.
Two or three days. You were in a dark spot. You need football to start.
Yeah,
it's playing out exactly as you said it would.
They're going to get swept.
Paragraphs.
I said they would get swept by Atlanta. They did.
We all knew that would happen.
They're going to get swept by Philadelphia. Yep. They've scored no runs. Yeah. Let me go to the good news first. And
series are going to keep the Phillies in the wild card.
That's right.
Yeah.
This comes from Jason Smarl, our friend who does Lachizari Nights in Syracuse.
Yes,
and so let me read it. I thought I would write to let you know about this year's Lachizari Night. I meant to write many times as the connective tissue has run strong this season. I just never got around to it. First, Austin Voth was here as part of the visiting Buffalo Bisons. Then the Mets sent us another one of your favorites, Cionel Perez stinks. I have enjoyed many Tony Kornheiser salutes all season, both here at historic NBT Bank Stadium and unbelievably in other locations as the Littles know of our dumb promotion. I've had salutes in Buffalo and Rochester. I'm recognized in their baseball stadiums. I now even get emails from Ryan Mitchell, the voice of the Columbus Clippers, who wants us to schedule a cheesery night when the Clip Show is in town. I find it hard to believe we're about to have our fifth annual cheesery night here in Syracuse. After 5 years, my staff still doesn't get it, but they love it. The Littles are getting restless, so I had to write to let them know we're still dumb enough to keep doing this. Lachizari Night, the fifth anniversary special, is taking place on Tuesday, September 1st. That's in 3 or 4 weeks. First is the dreaded Rochester Red Wings, the AAA affiliate of your Washington Nationals. This year, we continue to have a hotel deal for traveling Littles, and there will be pre- and post-game soirees at Jake Hafner's restaurant. We will have $10 tickets for Littles. To use the code, we will continue to have on-field games and inside jokes that the other guests will not understand. For Littles who want to attend, there will be information posted to the TK Littles Smart and Funny Facebook page. At worst, you can show up at the stadium and use the code. The Lillehammer jacket is a scam. It's a great code. To get the $10 tickets in Section 103 with the other Littles, we will have a few new tricks up our sleeve, and hopefully some bigs will show up. For a conversation I had via text with Dan Byrne, there's a better than 0% chance he shows up. I will reach out to Chuck and Roxy, and I feel good about Aunt Claire and Dina from wherever she is currently from, near Denora.
That's right.
Here is the invitation for you, Nigel, Michael, and the whole family to come up to lovely central New York. We're currently in year 4 of road construction on Interstate 81. Yeah, it's going to go on forever. So travelers may want to stick to the side streets or the beautiful tree-lined streets on the city's north side. I suspect you will decline as you're probably waiting for the 25th anniversary so you can make a big splash. I'm a little bit behind on the podcast as I'm still in the NBA Finals and no one thinks the Knicks can win. That's funny. I would like to ask Nigel's help in connecting me with the world champion whistler from Binghamton to see if he's available to whistle the national anthem. That's Chris Ullman.
Chris Ullman, I believe we have done that already.
Thank you for doing what you all do and for helping get the word out for our little, pun intended, dumb promotion that continues to take on a life of its own and become another gathering place for those of us who love the pod. Thanks for all the laughs. Please tell Dr. Dietz to eat it. And this is Jason Smarl, the GM of the Syracuse Mets. And that's a lovely thing. And I encourage everybody who's in upstate New York to go there, go to Cooperstown as a side trip, do all of these things. Okay? But let me get to the Nats, what Michael alluded to before. It's depressing now. It is depressing. They not only don't have Meade and they don't have Garcia, And that is a total of 40 home runs and 124 RBI this year. They are not being replaced by anybody. No regular player, no everyday player came back in trade. They've lost 40 home runs and 124 RBI. They lost a 12-3 pitcher. The Nats were 16-6 in the games that Griffin started. And it feels like they've scored no runs in the last two games against Philadelphia. No runs. Right, they got swept by Atlanta, which I predicted after they lost the first game. I didn't even wait for them to play the Phillies. I said they'd get swept by the Phillies. Yeah, the top of the order last night, Dylan Cruz and Shaputsva went 0-8. They gave them nothing. Nothing. James Wood, who's normally at the top of the order, has an oblique strain. He's on the IL. He's got to be out 10 to 15 days, whatever it is. It feels like the team has been gutted like a fish by these trades. Now, Allen is optimistic. Allen says and sends me copy about this. There's some guy who writes that the Nationals should get an A grade for what they have done. You know, because they had found money. Because Garcia was having his best year. Because Mead was dropped from the sky. He had no history. Griffin dropped from the sky. No, that's true. They had found money. But what did they spend it on? Not a single everyday player. On nine arms, because their bullpen stinks. It's the worst in baseball. They had the most runs and the worst amount of blown saves. Their bullpen is terrible. Nine arms is what they brought in. You don't know, are any of them on the team right now? Not that I know of. Get on the team. Throw them out there. See if they can get one out in an inning. One out. See if they have any promise whatsoever. Because what you have is, as we say in the trade, garbage. That's what you have. So do that. See, but what the Nats did under Rizzo and what the Nats are doing now under Toboni is they're trading today for tomorrow. Time after time, today for tomorrow, and tomorrow never comes. It just doesn't.
Tomorrow.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
I know I immediately thought of the line from Empty Chairs and Empty Tables. Here they talked of revolution. Here it was they lit the flame. Here they sang about tomorrow, and tomorrow never came. So you're looking back at 5-6 years this week, the Nats.
Yes.
But as you zoom out, that you know, this has been such a short history of a team, but we really are focused on this. I like that Allen's looking optimistic towards the future. I think we have to. I think the bummer is we had this false hope based on what we saw in May and June of the
season.
But we look at what the playoff odds were. They were really in the low tens as 11% of 10 days ago.
Nobody thought they were going to make the playoffs.
No,
That's why when you saw those series against playoff teams in that 2 month stretch, you're like, wow, they're really eking out these wins, losing game one, winning games two and three, often on the road. And just this 8-game stretch was just a reminder of where we are.
Yeah, we're not a good team. We lose to good teams. This season was gravy. It was wonderful. I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs or anything like that. I might have thought so September 15th if they were one game out, but I didn't think so yesterday or before last week or anything like that. It was a total gravy season. But again, you are repeating this pattern. You are trading today for tomorrow. It hasn't happened yet. You didn't bring in a single everyday player.
That's frustrating.
You know? So nobody can help you. Nobody can get in the lineup and help you. You can bring them in as relievers. Look, Early has a history of being good in the majors.
Yeah. No, I think he'll be very good for you.
I hope so. But where is he now? He's on the injured list.
Yes.
So you didn't trade for this year. You didn't trade for this month. You didn't trade for this week. You traded for tomorrow.
Sort of
see
like,
what's going to happen.
Sort of like how Orioles fans have to feel, where they've reset the team again without
the
rush.
Like, I think that these trades have affected the Nationals' psyche.
Yeah.
I think that they have made people upset. And they may not win another game all year. I mean, they're not a functional team right now. But as bad as I feel, I don't feel the kind of anger that if I was a Baltimore Oriole fan, I would feel.
Sure.
Real anger.
What do you mean you trade them? Prospects, yeah.
You know, if I was a Baltimore Oriole fan, I'd feel real anger. If I was a San Francisco Giant fan, trade Robbie Ray in division to the Padres? What?
Yeah.
I know. So anyway, so that is my wrap up on all of this. That's how I feel. I watched every pitch last night.
Oof.
You know, I mean, I watched. Again, you know, they put Cruz doesn't get any hits. He often hits the ball hard right at someone. He doesn't actually get on base unless he's forcing someone out at second and beating out the double play throw. And Shaputsva, well, stop, get out of here. You know, he didn't do anything. He made a couple of good plays in the field, made a couple of bad plays in the field, and had no hits and didn't do anything. And now they have House. The House got a hit. You got to give House 2 weeks. I suppose you have to give Shaputsva 2 weeks. You got to give him 2 weeks.
Yeah, give him a little bit of
rest. You know, and stop, you know, jerking him around in the lineup. Give him 2 weeks, day after day after day, and see what happens. But that's not the style of Toboni or the baby manager. It's not. I have one other thing to talk about, if nobody minds. It appears that the Triple Crown, if you want to talk about things being gutted, yes. It appears that the Triple Crown in horse racing, which is the only thing that people care about in horse racing, the average fan, and even the people in the business, the Triple Crown appears to be gone. Churchill Downs and the New York Racing Association have come up with a six-race circumstance to crown the champion three-year-old of the year. These races are the Kentucky Derby, the Belmont Stakes, the Travers, the Matt Wynn. There's one other stakes race that has been around for a while, and I'm just the Jim Dandy. And it will end with a race at Churchill Downs, where the champion will be crowned. And no one knows how many races you have to race. Nobody knows how many you have to win. This is just a pie-in-the-sky thing to crown a three-year-old champion. And the one that's not in there is the Preakness.
Yeah.
It's a very deliberate act. We're kicking the Preakness out. We're sick of the Preakness. We're sick of trainers not running in the Preakness, which has happened recently. Didn't happen for 100 years, but now it has happened recently and increasingly. Now, my friend David says, I got this thing all wrong. Says that the Triple Crown doesn't matter at all if it's not run at Belmont, if it's run at Saratoga and it's not a mile and a half, or it's run at Laurel, which is what happened this year. It's junk.
Yeah.
He's probably right about that. He believes that trainers will indeed go for the Triple Crown if they have a horse they think can win it, because the amount of money you win in stud fees is like $80 to $100 million, oh, yeah. Whereas the amount of money you win in the race itself is $2 to $3 million. So David says the lure is there and will always be there. And David's good friends with Bob Baffert, who wants to win Triple Crowns and has won two of them.
Yeah.
You know, my friend Rich Podolsky is ensured that the Preakness will survive, is ensured that this new thing won't overtake it. But in any case, we should talk to Flatter about it, too.
Yes.
You know, because Flatter knows a lot more than I do. But in any case, they just put a bullseye on the back of the Preakness. And Maryland, see, what happened was that the Churchill Downs tried to buy the Preakness from Maryland. And the governor, Wes Moore, who likes horse racing, said, no, Maryland will pay for this.
Yeah.
We'll rebuild Pimlico. We'll keep the Preakness. So now he's standing there holding a bag in his hand. There's nothing in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand this as well as I should, but it does seem to me, and of course on PTI I talked about this, Wilmot doesn't even care about
the
it.
Horses, no.
Yeah, but it does seem to me that the Preakness is out. You know, now the way to save it, of course, is always the same way to save it. You change the time between the Derby and the Preakness. Yes. But what people say is, well, the Belmont's not moving. They're not going to move to the first weekend in July. They want the date that they have. So you have to shoehorn the Preakness in there at some point. You got to give probably one extra week, even though for 100 years they raced it 2 weeks after the Derby and then 3 weeks to the Belmont. So I don't know how they're going to do it. But somebody is going to have to come up with something, or it appears that the concept of the Triple Crown and the actual Preakness have taken a big hit.
I think Governor Moore is supposed to make some sort of announcement today.
What's he going to announce?
I think it's regarding the date that they'll hold the Preakness, and he'll probably refer to all the stuff that's been happening in the last couple of days.
So if I was him, I'd hold it a month after, and I'd say to the Belmont, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see what he does. Is that supposed to happen today?
That's what I believe.
Good, that'll have something. We can have something to talk about on the PTI show.
Sure.
That's fine. Is there anybody want to add to that? Sean, Michael?
I hope they address the tradition of the toilet run.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, the urinal run, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you run on top. You run on top, and then you fall through.
People
you fall through, break their legs. They're drunk. They're all drunk.
They throw full beers at you while you're walking yes. across.
It's really, you know, that's why it should have been at Laurel. Laurel's such a dump. And Pimlico's going to look good now.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the beginning of the show. When we come back, is it Buster or is it Bob Ryan?
Do you watch any of the Scuba Highlights?
I watched the highlights this morning. Look, he went six innings and gave up two runs.
It's not bad.
He didn't get bombed. He lost the game because the Dodgers don't win any games at the moment.
Yeah,
five. They don't win any games. They lose to the Red Sox. They lose to the Cubs. Wilbon, who, of course, makes the PTI show the most Chicago-centric show in the history of the world, it just talks about the Cubs all the time. Cubs, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears. Can't wait for them to move to Indiana. Can't wait. Buster Olney, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you by FanDuel. Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They say that every day your business is late to AI, you actually fall 2 days behind. Look, the competition is only moving faster, and trying to keep up can feel completely overwhelming. Fortunately, there's NetSuite Next. You probably already know NetSuite as the trusted AI-powered business management suite used by over 43,000 customers to securely connect financials, inventory, HR, and CRM into one single source of truth. Well, NetSuite Next is a massive leap forward because AI is now built into everything you do. It automatically surfaces custom insights throughout your day, deploys AI agents to handle routine work, and lets you ask questions just like you're talking to a colleague. It's customized for a wide range of industries, and honestly, if you need a system to scale your business, this is what you should use. Whether you earn millions or hundreds of millions, it's time for NetSuite Next. For the first time ever, you can try NetSuite Next for free if your revenues are at least in the seven figures. Woo! Go to netsuite.ai/Tony. Built for every industry, ready for every boardroom. netsuite.ai/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are the Websters. And they write, thanks for playing us a while back. Here are two new tunes from the Websters. Love this stinking show and the potato plant updates it provides. The Websters are an indie rock band from Chicago featuring Preston Pizzolini on vocals and guitar, Mark Winkler on vocals and keyboards, Jordan Kozer on drums, Greg Julin on bass, and Doug Bobbenhaus on vocals and guitars. And they say, please tell John Casper and Kevin Cahoon to eat it. This is called Roulette. It plays in Buster Olney, and we got a million things to talk about, but we have to talk about plants and potatoes and tomatoes, basically. So it was really hot here in Washington for 5 or 6 days. I was away. I was in Delaware. It was like over 100. And it appears that my tomato plants have not died, but are not producing fruit. They are tall. They are relatively green, somewhat yellowed, but they're not any more producing any fruit. There's nothing to indicate that they're going to give me tomatoes. I've just dropped about $50 on these things. And I wonder, have you ever had a situation like that?
Yes. In fact, I'll just tell you, like, the trade deadline was absolutely bonkers. You had almost four dozen trades. It felt like it was just going and going and going and going. I landed back in Montana at 12:30 this morning. I got home, and I went out with my iPhone and put on the flashlight and was looking at our tomatoes. For that exact reason, okay, trying to assess where we are. And I plan later today to reach out to my oldest sister, Hannah, who is the tomato expert, to say, Hannah, our tomato plants look a little dry. it was really hot last week. I need some feedback on how do we handle the watering as we go forward. So you and I, Tony, are living parallel lives. I did check on the potato plants, too, also in the middle of the night, and they're doing okay.
No, I have no worries about my potatoes and my peppers are producing. Yes. I'm just getting no fruit at all from the four tomato plants that I put in the dirt. So, I don't know. Okay, that's good to know. Let's get to baseball, because the trade deadline was frenetic, and it's the greatest day in baseball. It is. This is the greatest day. This is not like the NBA or the NHL or the NFL. No, but a lot of teams get involved in this. This is a really big deal. And let me just start with the Philadelphia Phillies, because if you don't think Arraez can hit, his first two at-bats last night were RBI singles. And as a result of Arraez, who's not a great fielder, and you have to find a place to put him, they have moved Bryce Harper to the outfield. Bryce Harper hasn't played the outfield in years. He's played first base for the Phillies for years. He went to the outfield, and I need to ask this essential question. When Don Mattingly last week said of Bryce Harper, saying to Dave Dombrowski, why don't you get us something? And he said, everybody knows that's just Bryce. No one pays any attention. I went on the PTI show and Wilbon said, what do you make of this? I said, what I make of this is it's possible that Bryce Harper's not going to be a Philly for that much longer. Because it's the second thing. This is the second time that management has basically told him to shut up. The first time, Dave Dombrowski said he's not even elite anymore. Let's see if he can still be elite. Now, he went to the outfield. That's a big deal, right? What's his status in Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's a really big deal. I mean, all you have to do is think back to the beginning of last year when the Boston Red Sox, you know, had injury issues, and so they asked Rafael Devers to take ground balls at first base, and he refused.
Stick it. He said stick it, yeah.
So you have in this situation a future Hall of Famer volunteering, and by the way, this has been going on for 2 years. Bryce has made it known to the Phillies, look, I'll go back to the outfield if you need. If we can make our team better, if we can be in a better position, then let's do that. And I will move to the outfield. It is interesting because Arraez has actually this year improved dramatically at second base. Ron Washington was the infield coach with the Giants. And Arraez showed up the first day, and Ron Washington said, look, if you're going to get better, you have to work at this every single day. And every day Arraez was out there, his defensive metrics have improved. But it set off this series of dominoes where Arraez now plays second base. And Bryson Stott, who's a better second baseman shortstop than he is, he goes to third. And Alec Bohm, who was a third baseman most of his life, goes to first base, and Bryce Harper goes the out. It's an island of misfit toys defensively.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay? But you love the fact that they're trying to win. They clearly needed help offensively. And Luis Arraez is one of these players who every year at the trade deadline, every winter, when he hits free agency, everyone's like, well, he doesn't really run. He doesn't hit for a lot of power. He doesn't have a natural position, so we don't want him. And then we get to the trade deadline, and everyone wants him.
I need to ask about this.
He put the ball in play.
He had his first two at-bats. He had RBI singles last night against the Nationals. He finished 2-for-4 for the night, but he hit the ball four times. And he's traded every year. It's not like he's a pretty good player. He leads the league in batting every single year and gets traded. Is he a bad guy? How does this happen?
No, it's because he doesn't hit for power. He doesn't run well. And so when you're sitting in a scout meeting and front office meeting in November, and you look at all the metrics and you're like, oh, I don't want to invest in that guy. And then we're going to get to late September and October, and the opposing manager is going to be like, I don't want to pitch to that guy because all he does is hit line drives.
Yes. Yeah, it's really amazing to me. I mean, I sent out text last night, this is why you picked this guy up, because he had, again, two RBI against two different pitchers in the first two times he was up. I need to ask this as well. I want to talk about Rutschman going to the Red Sox, but I want to bring in Robbie Ray going from the Padres from the Giants to the Padres. Buster, I don't recall people trading in division. When did this start happening? Trading in division. If I'm a fan of the Orioles or the Giants, I'm livid because of this.
So I think that Billy Beane, he became one of the first general managers to just have the attitude of, you know what, F it. I just want to get the best players in return. And if I happen to make a trade with a division rival and I make that that rival, and if I you know, get the players I want and at the same time make that rival weaker, you know, by taking prospects from them, I'll do that. And I'll be open-minded with that. Teams are more and more willing to do that. Now, there are some special cases. Like when Mason Miller was rumored about a couple weeks ago, you knew there was no chance the Padres would trade him to the Dodgers.
Right.
You know, there's always a little prickly thing between the Orioles and the Yankees and the Yankees and the Red Sox, a little bit between the Yankees and the Mets. But generally speaking, you're right. Teams, you know, in the past didn't trade in the division. Now they do.
Yeah, is Rutschman just not that good? And that they could just get a switch-hitting, good defensive catcher, just get rid of him?
Well, it you know, and one thing, look, it's so funny because the response to the trade, in terms of prospect value, people around the sport are like, oh, my God, the Red Sox overpaid, right? They got it. They gave up all these prospects to get Adley Rutschman, and I get that. And the Orioles can say, hey, we got better in the future, but good Lord, at some point, can the future be now for the Orioles who tanked four seasons, yes, right, to be in this position? I was getting text messages, I'm sure you were too, from friends who are Orioles fans, and they're heartbroken.
Yes.
And yeah, you might have gotten a guy in Class A or Double A that looks really promising, but Adley Rutschman was brought up to be the leader of the next generation, and now he's gone. And he's still a good player. The question is with Rutschman is about health. He's currently on the injured list. He's got some left wrist inflammation, which you think is a little, you know, potentially a little problematic for a catcher. But I thought I love the fact that the Red Sox are trying to win. We love it when the Padres are trying to win, the Cubs are trying to win, the Red Sox are trying to win. They're not worried about models and value efficiency, that sort of thing. I love it when teams are trying to win, including the Dodgers, by the way, Tony.
Yes, but they just don't win. They got swept by the Red Sox, and they're in the process of being swept by the Cubs. It's so odd, isn't it?
Well, and I think it underscores a vulnerability. Like, the general reaction from a lot of fans and people maybe within the industry, some people within the industry was, boy, they're going to be unbeatable. And I just look back to last fall, the Blue Jays had them, you know, within one run of beating them and within two outs. And the thing
That's
is,
right.
And I cover those, you know, the Dynasty Yankees of the late 90s. And I was there the spring training morning. They won 125 games in 1998. And the next spring they traded for Roger Clemens, two-time Cy Young Award winner. And the baseball world was up in arms over that for the same reason they are now about Skubal going to the Dodgers. But that Yankee team, year by year, it got more vulnerable. And when you look at the Dodgers, they have two major catching injury situations now. Mookie
Will
Betts
Smith
has not played well.
Yeah.
They've got stuff going on. Are they a great? Do they have a great rotation? You know, are they a great team? Sure, but they're beatable.
No, I agree with that. Thank you for mentioning the Yankees. The Yankees traded for Luis Garcia Jr., who, much like Arraez, needs a place to play if he's going to play at all. And they traded away four pitchers in order to get him. And, you know, people probably wonder, why would you do that? Well, that's not the headline anymore. The headline for the Yankees now is George Lombard Jr., who made his debut last night for the Yankees and hit a home run, and I believe he's the youngest player to ever do that in a debut game. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's right. First off, I've gotten to know his dad, George Lombard, who played in the big leagues, is now as a coach, bench coach for the Detroit Tigers. What a great family. And it so happened that coincidentally yesterday, I was in the living room of our friend Peter Gammons on the Cape, and Peter Gammons, in his Hall of Fame speech, talked about George Lombard and about how George Lombard, and this is George Lombard Jr.'s grandmother, was a civil rights activist who was friends with Martin Luther King. His grandfather was a Harvard Business School professor for four decades. And he is not only has that great background, really smart kid, But he played soccer for years and years and years, and man, he can move at shortstop. I had scouts tell me in spring training that the day he steps on a big league field, he's going to be one of the best defenders in the major leagues. And the question has always been about, okay, well, how is his offense going to come along? He killed it his last few weeks in the minor leagues, and last night he hits a home run in his first game. And there's that great video of his dad and his mom watching him in the stands at Yankee Stadium, you know, tipping the cap to the Tigers who get the night off. And in the same night, his brother Jacob hits his first home run in professional baseball in a minor league game. Really cool.
Is there a danger that people are going to say, okay, he's Derek Jeter? Is that the danger here?
I think we're far enough removed where you're not, you know, you don't have to be the guy who replaced Derek Jeter. He replaced the guy who replaced the guy who replaced Derek Jeter. And let's face it, the bar is lower because Anthony Volpe, in the end, turned out to be a disappointment for the Yankees.
Yeah. Well, the Yankees and Tampa Bay both made moves. They're obviously trying to win. Milwaukee and Atlanta did nothing. Were you surprised by that?
The Brewers did some adding pitching depth. I was most surprised by the Braves. I thought if you were looking for a right-handed hitter, if you were looking for a relief pitcher, it was a really thin market. If you were looking for a starting pitcher, there were a ton of guys out there.
Yes,
it was like a game of musical chairs among the contenders, and I thought for sure that both the Braves and the Phillies would bolster their rotation. And so when we got to the deadline, and Trevor Rogers of the Orioles hadn't been traded, and the Braves hadn't landed him or hadn't landed Brady Singer or one of the guys, Casey Mize or Robbie Ray, that was a surprise to me. You know, Alex Anthopoulos was the general manager who back in 2021 famously added four or five outfielders and went on to win the World Series. I thought he would do more.
So, I mean, I was amazed is too strong a word. I was very surprised. Mark Feinsand felt the same way, that they closed the Skubal deal 40 hours before the end of the trade deadline, and that Atlanta or Milwaukee, I mean, are these prospects so great that Atlanta or Milwaukee couldn't have thrown in, or Philadelphia thrown in, an everyday player with some prospects? Are the prospects that good that that deal had to be closed so early?
It's kind of like a poker game, right? You know, how many rounds of bidding will you have? Well, in this case, it felt like that basically the Tigers took the game off the board after one round. That's the feedback I've gotten from other teams, that there wasn't that circle. Now, in fairness, the Tigers, and Scott Harris, their head of baseball operations, you know, has been defending his actions in this thing. In some cases, I think that, you know, the what the Tigers did is go to an organization and said, would you give up this prospect? For example, when they talked to the Yankees, they said, can we talk about George Lombard Jr.? The Yankees said no, and so the Tigers said, okay, we're going to move on someplace else, effectively. And I think that's what happened here, that the Dodgers were the one organization basically to say, the guys you were asking about, we're ready to go. And it was clear, this is GM said to me, that the Tigers went into this, they had a group of prospects in mind, they focused on it, and they execute the deal with the Dodgers. And by the way, you know, they're now within a couple of games of a wild card spot, and I get that they got value back in the return. But if we're going to laud, you know, the efforts of teams like the Rays, you know, like the Guardians, like the Red Sox, the Padres to try to win, it kind of makes me sick to my stomach when teams don't try to win.
Well, that brings me to the Nats. my last question, of course. The Nats traded two everyday players and the best pitcher they had this year. For no everyday players. They traded 40 home runs and 126 RBI for no everyday players, for nine pitchers, two of whom have had some small, well, I guess Bird's had more than small experience in the major leagues, and they are repeating to me what Mike Rizzo used to do. You're trading today for tomorrow. The Nats won a World Series, and they haven't finished above 500 since. And you trade today for tomorrow. What do you look at when you see nine arms just in the worst bullpen in the majors right now? Should I be encouraged or should I be forlorn as I feel right now?
I think you should be encouraged. Look, and there's some cases because, you know, the question for me is the proportional response. Like, I love the fact that the Red Sox went for it because they're playing great. the Nationals, and you see them play on a regular basis, they are ahead of schedule. Like, they have made great progress this year, but I don't think anybody believes that they could win, get to the postseason and win in October with that staff. So I like this approach. I thought it was the appropriate response for where they are, because they're not close to the best teams in the National League.
No, they're not.
I was not as discouraged by it as you were.
Right, well, then I feel better about that. I feel better about that, because you do this for a living, and I just scream and yell, along with the guy next to me who screams and yells louder. Thank you, Buster.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Tony.
Buster Olney. It's great. Just great. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Bob Ryan. We're going to still talk about baseball. We're going to talk about the Red Sox, the most surprising team in the last month and a half in all of baseball. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, these are the Websters. I like the Websters. I think
they're
good.
Very good, yeah. Like
this
them.
Is called When It's Gone. Michael, if independent artists like the Websters want their music played on this show, how do they go about it?
Send us your music by emailing to jingles@tonykornheiser.com. And for the new month, we have a new promo code from Johnny O, TK Corn. Let's see if you can get a better deal.
TK Corn, yeah. The corn shouldn't cost $5.
Probably not.
An ear. Shouldn't do that. Yeah. I'm feeling badly because I got Michael's anniversary wrong. I'm just feeling badly about that. The Websters play in Bob Ryan. The segment with Bob Ryan is brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. Bob, as everybody knows, is a quintessential American sports writer. And the two things that he knows better than anybody are baseball and basketball. So I want to start with the Red Sox. How did they get to be this good so suddenly? Weren't they bad? They fired a manager. How did this happen?
They fired the manager. They were bad. They were bad in every way, in all three phases of the game. You know, not pitching. No, I got to say this through their struggles with the plate, which were enormous in April, May, and beginning of June. The pitching wasn't too bad. The bullpen's been pretty good. You check all their numbers, and they rank really well, among the American League pitchers. But they weren't hitting at all, and they had no power, hardly any, except for one guy, Wilson Contreras.
Yes.
No power, no. It was awful. And then it all began, Tony, when they swept the Yankees. That's how it began.
Yeah.
A 3-game sweep. We didn't see that coming. Now, all I can tell you is this: Dan Shaughnessy, my colleague, my great colleague, had an item in his Sunday column this past week in which he said that he had a conversation with Alex Cora on June 30th. And Alex Cora said, look at the schedule coming up. I think they're going to take off. How about that? And they did. They have. Look at, it's getting more and more ridiculous. Last night, 14-2, 6-run first. Now they are playing. They're getting clutch. And the other thing, the other team is complicit in their own demise at times. They've had a couple games where the opponents just, like one game, it was a game-ending double play ball that was not made, and they wound up getting 3 runs in the ninth to win after they were down. Things like that are happening too. It's karma as well as skill. But they are they're functioning at an extremely high level.
Alex Cora was a much sought-after manager. The Red Sox were thrilled to have Alex Cora. Was firing him the correct move in your mind?
No, at the time I didn't see that, but that was the point of anything, that I couldn't hold him accountable for it. And I still don't really think that that's, what magic secret sauce formula, whatever you want to use as a phrase to describe what Chad Tracy is doing. They like playing for him. A lot of the guys who came through the system knew him in the minors in Worcester, and they liked him, and they speak well of him. And he's a lifer, you know, son of Jim Tracy, who managed the Dodgers. He's a kid that grew up in the clubhouse, one of those guys. His whole life has been about baseball, and he's apparently a really engaging fellow. The original question, no, I didn't see that made any sense to make him a scapegoat. But he seems very content, Corey. He's enjoying his life. And I think we all agree that probably in 2027, he'll be managing somebody in 2027.
Yeah. So were they, in your mind, as bad as they appeared? And are they, in your mind, as good as they look now?
Well, that's the great question. That's a great question. The big question, of course, of how they were one of them countless teams as we look forward to August 3rd and the trading deadline. Are they going to be buyers or sellers? And 6 weeks ago or 7 weeks ago, you would have said, well, clearly they're going to be sellers. They're going to get rid of Chapman, give them the contender. They're going to get rid of Duran in left field, who's not hitting barely 200 now, even now. And they're going to get rid of, and they're going to go for the future. And now, the opposite. They went and they've got Adley Rutschman, not playing at the moment. He's hurt, but he gives them another right hand bat and a good defensive catcher. And they picked up a pitcher that I don't know anything about, but apparently he's not bad. They're very much buyers, and they are talking about playoff. When we're ready to say it can't go any farther, you get a night like last night. I mean, here I am waking up in Maine and finding out they won 14-2 with a 6-run first. I mean, it's just getting crazier and crazier.
Adley Rutschman is not an inconsequential name in baseball. He was the overall number one pick in the draft. He appeared when he first started with the Orioles to be a Hall of Fame type player. Now, he has regressed, clearly, but he's still, if what I'm given to understand by Matt Kelleher, the Boston catching situation was not only terrible defensively, it was terrible offensively, and you couldn't probably ask for a better pickup than Rutschman, right?
They were last in the league, I think, in home runs. And this is in Fenway Park, which, by the way, is more of a doubles park than homer park, but still is for right-hand, when you always want to have some right-hand power, and he hopefully will give him some of that. But you're right, he was the number one pick, and he's had 1 year when he was an MVP, he was mentioned, even like he finished third or fourth or something. But he has been hurt, and he is hurt. But it was on paper, a very good pickup. My mind's swirling as I talk, thinking about what's been going on and who's been doing it. Guys that we have no idea who they were at the start of the season, Siegler, Montecerio, I didn't know these people. I mean, they're playing very well right now.
We just had Buster Olney on. I asked him this question, and I'll ask you the same question. Trading in division? Did you ever think that the Orioles and the Red Sox would? If I were an Orioles fan, I would be livid at this. I mean, you want to trade the catcher? Trade the catcher? Don't trade him to the Red Sox, right?
No, it's just kind of a sports no-no. But as soon as you said that, I thought about a very, very, very big one once upon a time that had consequences, enormous consequences for the Yankees, and that was Danny Cater for Sparky Lyle.
Yeah,
the Red Sox traded Sparky Lyle to the Yankees, Now we're talking literally 50 years now. I know it's hard.
Yeah, but Sparky Lyle became one of the great relievers of all time when relievers went out there 3 days a week and pitched three innings a shot. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, there's some historical precedent, but it's not the norm. Most people don't do that.
All right, I'm going to shift gears entirely. The last time we spoke about the fact that nobody understood how the Celtics could trade Jaylen Brown for Paul George. And now this is compounded by 1,000% because the Celtics got LeBron James. What? The 76ers got LeBron James. What is the impact on the Celtics? What is the impact on the psyche of people who care about the Celtics that now it honestly looks like the 76ers are the team to beat and that the Celtics have contributed to this?
Well, what people are saying is that if and when the 76ers have their parade on South Broad Street, that make sure that Brad Stevens gets a ring. So that's what we're saying up here. And I say that as somebody who is a very much an admirer of Brad Stevens, but he's fearless. They are the target. They're helping build a superpower, and LeBron has said outright that one contributing factor to him picking Philadelphia was when Brown became a 76er. This is ancient rivalry we were talking about. Just think about this. I wish the season started tomorrow, Tony. I really do. I'm so curious and fascinated by this. The Sixers are one of those teams I call a lab experiment team, how good they're going to be, we'll find out. But meanwhile, we've got the two ancient rivals, the Knicks and the Sixers, we got all these games to look forward to this year. The rivalries have been spiced up tremendously here. But you're right, the implications, you know, will people turn on Brad? You know, it's one thing to make a joke, but they're going to turn on him. We'll see.
So you have, it goes back, you know, 50, 60 years. It goes back to Chamberlain and Russell when Chamberlain yes. was in Philadelphia. It goes to Julius Erving and Larry Bird and the famous
right.
42-6, Doc, 42-6, and Julius punched Bird in the head.
Which know, happened directly in front of me. I could have reached out and touched them when that broke out. Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, the Knicks aren't that kind of rival because the Knicks haven't been good.
No.
The Philadelphia team has been good, right, for all that time.
Yeah, the Knicks had a spurt. You know, that spurt yeah. began when Dave DeBuscher was traded and the Knicks became, you know, viable, and it lasted until 74. They had a playoff series in 68. And so from that six-year, seven-year period, it was a very viable rivalry, tremendous rivalry. But then the Knicks, you know, went in their long, you know, march through the desert, and the Celtics remained viable, yeah. and the Knicks did not. We know that, and except for a couple of spurts. Right, it's not the same, but Philadelphia rivalry. But it's been dormant for a while, and now it's going to come raging back. And guess who their first exhibition opponent is? Yeah, they play each other twice in the four-game exhibition. They're playing each other twice this
wow.
year.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll get out of it here on this, but when you make a trade, if you're a smart guy, and Brad Stevens is a smart guy, you have to consider all the possibilities of that trade. What dominoes mm-hmm. fall and what dominoes remain? Do you think ever, ever, ever once that Brad Stevens said, well, if I trade Jaylen Brown to the Sixers, what if LeBron goes there? Do you think he ever considered that?
I would have to give him the benefit of that doubt, and then that he's too smart not to think yeah. that would be an inducement for LeBron. But he, I can't say he doesn't care, but he's willing to suffer the consequences or whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it. Yeah, it's curious. It's very strange, and you know, and it's got on everyone's mind down here that up in Boston that loves basketball, and we've had such faith. You know, Ivan's saying, before the Brown trade, when we don't know what was going to happen, if they in Brad, I trust.
Yeah.
If they trade him, I'll live with it. Yeah. If they don't trade him, I'll live with it. Well, they traded him, and I'm not comfortable with it, and never seeing you know what the ultimate consequence was going to be.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Okay. Enjoy your vacation in Maine. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Tony. Bye bye now.
Bob Ryan, the quintessential American sports writer, and this segment with Bob Ryan has been brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
Good to hear Gary. Makes me happy. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad? They threw us a curveball this morning.
Yeah, we got the bagel sandwiches in.
Which are always great.
And not just a couple.
Got 10,000.
It's a lot of sandwiches. We're very, very excited about that. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, when I grow up to be a man, will I dig the same things that turned me on as a kid? Will I look back and say, I wish I hadn't done what I did? Will I joke around and still dig those sounds when I grow up to be a man? That's one of the great Beach Boy songs ever. Brian Wilson was probably 18 years old when he wrote that. This was recorded on this day in 1964, 62 years ago. Thanks to our guests today, Buster Olney and Bob Ryan. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. From Asim from L.A., A like omelet, sim, okay, Asim. Like a SIM card, a SIM, but currently in Bandon, Oregon, home of Bandon Dudes on vacation, which, as a reminder, is near North Bend, but fairly far from Bend. Yeah, it's good to know. Listening to Monday's pod, discussing the titular topic when Michael and Tony mentioned yesterday was Michael and Liz's 12th wedding anniversary, and I paused to do the math. Monday was August 3rd. August 3rd minus 1 is August 2nd. 2026 minus 12 is 2014. 8/2/14. Wait, I know that date. That's also the date that the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I tied the knot Well, actually, I commemorated as 2014, the year we signed the certificate. But she says 8/2/15, when we had the main event in our multi-day South Asian wedding exactly a year later, is the correct date. Which do you think is correct? I'll hang up and listen. Well, Michael's is the 15th.
Yes.
Right? Not the 14th. So I would say both are the 15th. Are the
I was ones. Also the 14th.
Hmm?
8/2/14.
But you were 8/2/15, right?
8/2/14.
Oh. I had it wrong?
Oh, it's 12 years. That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I had the August 2nd part, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, August 4, oh, 8/2/14. Well, that has more symmetry to it because they're all even numbers. Yes.
Again, I thought that's why you were focused on the number.
It's a good number.
Yeah, well, Elizabeth's was 11/11/22.
Oh, you can't top that.
No, that's tremendous. Yeah. From Neil Ayervais, while our Colorado summer of little celebration... I got the year wrong? God, get me off the air. while our Colorado summer of little celebration photo attached did not have the star power of the Chuck and Roxy event, it served as a microcosm of how your podcast is able to provide a community and connection among a diverse group of loyal listeners. Brian Lapina and I, with disparate backgrounds and interests, served to represent the 65 to dead demographic. Our pleasant surprise was the arrival of Nathan Ackerhelm, one-third our age, who recently moved to Denver from Charlotte, North Carolina. The ease of conversation and connection is a testament to your show and community. The woman to whom I'm related and whose connection is having to read all of my emails that end up in the discard pile. Experience that connection, which may reduce the number of eye rolls at my frequent attempts to relate tales from the show, which always stands out as a counterpoint to a time of polarization and strife. These are lovely pictures.
Oh, look at that.
Just wonderful pictures. Thank you so much. From Patrick C.R. Stedman in Raleigh via New Orleans. As I sit here watching the ESPN desk of their trade deadline show, it's Buster on the left and Kirkjian on the right. All I can hear in my head is Jerry Rafferty's Robert Zimmerman-ish voice singing potatoes to the left and the avocados to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. From Marcia Thompson in Ocean View, Delaware. Dear Tony, I don't have a urinal story. No, Marcia. No, I wouldn't think so. From Gary Van Giesen, Tony, hope that you held on to that collector's item beautiful sweatshirt from Jason. Now that his Bet podcast with Beltway Ben is gone, that classic hoodie could be valuable as the famous Honus Wagner card someday. It's not quite the Lillehammer jacket, but it's still pretty famous. We gave that away, didn't we?
I think
Michael,
didn't
we give that away?
We gave it away.
Yeah, okay. A haiku from Shad for Shop Credit. Ye old random hole on the scorecard tiebreaker cost you $12.50. Yeah, it did. I mean, I don't know what the random hole was, but we lost as a result. From Steve the Sycophant, the first sure sign of approaching autumn is here, dear Satchis. Starbucks has announced that its immortal pumpkin spice latte is returning on August 25th. Yes, espresso mixed with sugar and pumpkin spice syrup will once more be available to those who can't drink their coffee straight. As a non-coffee person, I just shake my head in amazement and reach for a shot of hot chocolate and rum. Happy breakfast. From Mark Lynch, I was eating lunch today in the bar of our local, in Canby, Indiana, of our local Mexican restaurant. The television was muted, but they had on the MLB Network, and I saw a gentleman talking and said his name was Mark Feinstein. I thought, well, I know that guy. Well, I don't know him. In fact, I've heard him talk, and now I've seen him talk, but I've never seen him and heard him talk at the same time. Yeah. Well, now you can.
Yeah.
From Barry, the rum guy sent us the rum in Panama City in Panama. I don't know what an ear of corn costs in Panama, but on my way back from the park, I bought a coconut for $1. Coconut water is a refreshing drink, especially after exercising. However, they're a bit more challenging than potatoes to grow in D.C., so you'll have to settle for the packaged bottles of coconut water, which will probably cost about the same as your organic magic ears of corn. Coconut water is very popular now.
Yes.
I've never had it.
I don't think I've ever had it.
Michael, is coconut water come from the coconut, and do they get the milk out of the water, or does it contain milky substances?
It would look a little bit cloudy to you, but it's just the water. Now, I would love to see you try and open up a coconut.
I would throw the coconut against the ground and see if it opened up on its own. I would not open a coconut. From Mark Hughes in Ashton, Maryland, dear Farmer Ron, the consensus from last week's email regarding the $30 charge for a few ears of corn and three or four tomatoes seems to be that the city slicker got taken by the locals. The good news is with your robust potato operation, the $30 is likely a write-off when you open up your pop-up potato stand in Greenwood, Delaware. Simply write it off as market research on the economics of dynamic pricing. I think it will fly with your accountant.
Like Greenwood, that's very specific.
From Matt Turnbull from Montreal, Quebec in Canada, the 2027 Canadian Open is happening in Toronto. Let Wilbon know the PGA hasn't totally abandoned the Midwest. That's funny. And one more. I grilled a really good New York strip last night, and PG served corn on the cob. It was really good, and I asked, where'd you get the corn? PG replied, Walmart. I asked how much. He said, 25 cents an ear. I said, really? DG, if you're out on your bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
Let's try this. Your line, just say it as I say. Say your line exactly as I'm about to.
Okay, sure.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Yes, thank you.
Just spin the wheel, what can you lose? After a night like this, it's easy to get confused. There can be no turning back. I will see it red. Suddenly everything went black. Unrequited, I invited. Hope I'm not extradited. We've all done things we might regret. It's up to you, roulette. Just sit the feeling past the fuse. And after a couple drinks, we'll be right back.
drink with a friend. I hope the fun never ends.